This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds.
Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And to make sure, history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
Holy smokes! Whoa, what an entrance! My God, it gets better every time. Welcome back, everybody, to Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I am your host, Jordan Hoffman, and with me today, back in the booth, is Brian, who is not at his usual post. We are not on Deck 44 today. We're on Deck 46. Deck 46 today for a very special episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. Big news in Star Trekville last week, as even this morning, big news. Rihanna is doing a song for the soundtrack to Star Trek Beyond, and it is not called Targ Better Have My Latinum. That's a joke, if you like Star Trek jokes. It's not called that. It's called Sledgehammer, and it's a song that I heard. Actually, I didn't even really get a chance to hear it because I've been very busy, because it's a big week in Star Trek. And I want to cut right down to it. We have a guest today, very special guest, fellow by the name of John Van Sitters in Los Angeles, who's beaming in on subspace. So the reason we've got John here is this, and this is no secret to anybody who's following news. This week, for the first time ever, Star Trek has released guidelines for fan films. Some of you listening may know exactly what I'm talking about, and some people might say, what the heck is a fan film? And why the heck do we need guidelines? Well, a fan film is what it sounds like, fan fiction, but filmed, or in this case, videotaped. And how to do it the right way. Well, why does there need to be a right way and a wrong way? Well, as a fan myself, and someone who, I'm not an employee of CBS, technically, and, I enjoy looking at, when I go to conventions, the most fun thing I see are when people dress up in costumes. They create a character, either one out of their own head, or they create the most lifelike Cardassian costume I've ever seen. It's the most exciting thing that I see. I think we all know that what we love about Star Trek is the enthusiasm of the fans. But there was a situation recently that is not a secret, that is an ongoing litigation that's happening right now between Star Trek and a particular fan production. Since it is ongoing litigation, and I am not privy to those facts, I don't know anything about it on a kind of granular level, so to speak. But I do know that it put us in a place that isn't the greatest in terms of being a Star Trek fan. It's not cool to have Star Trek and lawsuits in the same breath. And what we've got now is a situation that I think is really terrific. John and his group in L.A. have created a set of guidelines that I think will prevent this from ever happening again. And in time, when the dust settles, we will recognize that this is actually a fantastic thing that's happened for fans and for fan films and for creativity and for Star Trek. Now, when anybody hears rules, they go, oh man, rules. Who wants rules? I don't want rules. So initially, there may be some skepticism. And frankly, when I first read the rules, I was like, well, that one doesn't make sense. And well, that one doesn't make sense. But I had a conversation with John, and John shed some light on it. So I'm just kind of a neutral party here. I don't make Star Trek fan films. You do what you got to do. But I said to myself, I think it would be really great if John could come on this show and sort of explain what went into making these guidelines more than just, you know, putting up a blog post and having these guidelines be out there. Some thought that went behind each one, explain them, a little more nuance into the conversation, and then I think you're going to come away with more of an understanding of what went behind making these guidelines. And that is what I wanted to do today. So that's what's going to happen. John, are you out there?
I'm here.
Awesome. John, are you prepared to discuss this?
I'm definitely prepared to discuss this.
We're born prepared. But before we get into that, who the heck are you, John? People know who I am. I'm the loudmouth behind the podcast. Who is John Van Sitters? What makes him tick? What makes his warp core engine, what makes the intermix chamber in his warp core engine overheat? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
You're pushing really hard for the metaphor there.
I know.
Who am I? I'm pretty much a lifelong Star Trek fan who is lucky enough to have what I consider to be about the greatest job in the world. I've been around long enough to remember Star Trek when it was on primetime. Very, very faint, distant memories of that time. I grew up in the 70s, coming home after school and watching it in the afternoons. Very angry when, you know, Turnabout Intruder was invariably on, or The Alternative Factor in Mirror Mirror or Amok Time were not. Even more upset when the local TV affiliate decided to take it off in the afternoons.
Is it Amok Time or Amok Time?
It's whatever the individual fan wishes to say it is what I've figured out over the years.
But, like, you know, I was watching Corbin Might Maneuver the other day, and he says, "This is Baylock." And then McCoy comes on the bridge, and he says, "Baylock's message was heard all throughout the ship." He just said Baylock 30 seconds ago, and now he's saying Baylock.
But isn't that what's great about Star Trek is there's all these little idiosyncrasies where, you know, I mean,
opening scene of Wrath of Khan, he says, "This is the Kobayashi Maru," emphasis on Ma. 2 seconds later, Savick says, "Kobayashi Maru." What's going on there? And, if we can't get that set up, how are we going to work? All right, let's focus
in early original series. I could never decide if it was screens or shields that they were raising. All of that's great. You know, I loved Star Trek growing up, getting, you know, Bijou Trimble's Concordance, the Franz Joseph technical manuals and Enterprise blueprints. And those things just like absolutely hooked me on Star Trek. Having to stay up late to see it on Friday and Saturday nights after the local news when they took it off the air in the afternoons was terrible, because then if I missed an episode that I hadn't seen yet or really wanted to see, it could be a year before I'd see it again, if not years, depending on how schedules ran. There was no streaming. There was no there were no videotapes at that time. It was a terribly dark time.
It sounds like a horror.
It was a horror. you're much younger, so you didn't have to face the same horrors that I did.
Well, maybe that's true. Maybe that's true.
But so, ultimately, I was lucky enough to get, which, you know, you asked me who I am and what I do. I'm vice president of product development for CBS, and we do the licensing for Star Trek. And I've been lucky enough to be doing that first for Paramount and then with CBS for almost 18 years now. I've had an incredible amount of opportunity to work with anything and everything related to Star Trek, and it's been a spectacular ride. But at the base of it all, I'm a fan. I'm a huge, huge fan of Star Trek. I'm thrilled today that I get to be here talking about Star Trek, and someone will actually listen to what I'm saying about Star Trek, which is pretty cool, because most of the time, my wife and my kids will just kind of roll their eyes when I start in on it, and I don't blame them. But it's terrific. So that's you know, a little bit about who I am. And
but it wasn't like you went into life saying, "I want to work for Star Trek." You were working in business, and it sort of just it was like those time eddies in City on the Edge of Forever. It was like a natural thing that had to happen. It was bringing you to Star Trek was not
I spent most of my career before Star Trek working in the music industry, and then immediately before getting hired at Paramount, I had worked editing sales collateral materials for a large medical insurance company.
Oh, all right.
That was not quite as much fun. It's close.
Not the tricorder, but something much less. All right. So, and you say you've been doing this for 18 years now.
Almost 18 years. I'll hit 18 years this November.
And you've been involved. So what is a day-to-day? I mean, I sort of know this because of my, you know, I've known you for a little while, but your position is you've got your fingers in a little bit of everything. If there's a new Star Trek book, like a novel or one of the fun books like we had with Rob Perlman last week or the comics, I mean, you are not involved so much as a, well, you tell me, how does your interaction, how would you describe what it is that you do that sort of is involved in all of these products, as well as the toys and the, you know, pizza cutters and things like that?
The thing that I really love about the job is that there are absolutely no 2 days that are alike. In 18 years, I've never been over into a recording studio at CBS to do a podcast. This is a brand new, interesting day for me. Some days I am sitting at a desk looking at a ton of T-shirt designs and cell phone cases and mugs and things like that. There are other days where I get to do some pretty amazing things, it's an incredible honor to do. One day when Alan Dean Foster was working on the novelization for Star Trek Into Darkness, I was his chauffeur in L.A. and got to pick him up at the airport and take him over to Bad Robot, where he got to see an early cut of the movie, and I had breakfast with him and talked a lot about his work over the years, and it was just an incredible, incredible day to speak to an author of that magnitude about his work and how he approaches everything.
And there is so Star Trek will license itself out to people who are making official toys, official costumes, and your job to a certain extent is some of this is I don't want to say quality control, but you're just kind of making sure that things are true to the Star Trek vibe. And you gave me an example, and it kind of leads to what we're going to talk about with fan films of a time when you were reading some books. A book proposal, and you had to step in and say, no, that's not what Wesley Crusher does. No, that's not what, you know, people say, well, who's in charge of making sure characters?
Let's be clear. Part of what I do on a day-to-day basis is exercise my childhood demons in the fact that in the 1970s, you couldn't get a decent phaser toy. Something that looked like a pistol and shot little plastic discs was not really an appropriate phaser in my mind. So now I get to play a role in correcting that, and that's amazing. But yes, I definitely do essentially quality control for Star Trek, trying to make sure that things are appropriate to Star Trek and appropriate to the universe as well as not reflecting badly on Star Trek and the creation that we all love, that, you know, what Gene Roddenberry set out to do and that so many other creators over the years have set up in the shows. The example that we had discussed was we had gotten a novel, and in that novel, there was a scene where you had Wesley Crusher with his newfound traveler powers getting very angry with someone and actually reaching into their chest and pulling out their still beating heart.
Oh.
That's not really in character for Wesley. Isn't.
Get your rainbow sweater messy too. I mean,
it will. It'll stain. It's kind of like gravy. It doesn't come out so easy. but that's not appropriate to the character. And you do something like that, and it becomes very hard to redeem who that is. So we want to make sure that we're working with the licensees, and in this case with the authors and everything else, to, okay, why are you approaching it this way? That's not really appropriate for the character. What can we do to alter that and not impact the story you're trying to tell negatively, but also not negatively impact the characters that are absolutely beloved by people all over the world?
Right, which leads us to the point of fan films. I mean, what you're talking about is officially licensed, quote-unquote, work. Somebody out there that wants to do the Wesley Crusher story their way and have nothing to do with you guys, that is a totally different ball of wax, as they say. Totally different bag of self-sealing stem bolts. So what which leads us to guidelines for fan films. Let's just sort of cut to the chase and say, why now, and what is the impetus of putting up these guidelines?
Well, we've seen an explosion of fan films in recent years, and we know that these come from a place of a very deep love for Star Trek, and the technological advances that have happened in the last 10, 15 years have enabled fans to tell their stories with more ease and more detail and do some really amazing things. And for many years, we've used a simple guideline, both CBS and Paramount, in you know, cooperation on this, which is a Star Trek fan film is a fan creation that's non-commercial. While we thought that this was simple enough and helped filmmakers understand the separation that we need to keep between professional content and fan films, It's becoming increasingly clear that not everyone has understood where that line is between non-commercial and our professional efforts. And we decided to issue a set of guidelines that should help give some shape to this and standardize our approach and the approach that fans can take to non-commercial fan-generated content. Now, I've seen some muttering online about this, that the guidelines are, you know, oh, this is intended to end fan films. That's not the case at all. That's not what we're trying to do here. They're not intended to end fan films. But with the explosion of crowdfunding, abuses have very definitely crept into the process. For many, it became more about the item that you were donating to get than it was about supporting a fan production for its own sake. The production started spiraling larger and larger. There's something of an arms race about how many Hollywood names could be attached, how many people that had previously worked on Trek, how many famous actors could you involve? And that's not really in the spirit of fan fiction, not the fan fiction that I grew up with and that many people grew up with, which was more.
Would you say that it even sort of created a barrier of entry for people who wanted to?
I've spoken with some people, including some people that have been involved peripherally with fan films, that it has created a bit of a barrier of entry to some people because there's Star Trek fans all over the world and they don't necessarily have the ability to access Hollywood actors and people, even meet people that have worked on Trek unless they are able to travel to one of the larger conventions. So for a lot of people, they felt like, well, I can't get this actor and that actor. I can't get these people to tell my story. I don't know if I should bother because I just can't compete on the level that these other guys are playing at. And that's unfortunate because regardless of what someone else is doing, I would think it would be great for fans to show their passion, however it is. The Star Trek Las Vegas and the costume contest. Last year, we started offering a you know, different levels for the costume contest because there were a lot of people that were intimidated by the amazing costumes that you see, and they're like, I don't know if I want to enter the costume contest. I'm just going to get killed by this guy that's been working on this Borg for 10 years.
Right. And what's unfortunate is that sometimes some of the most creative ideas.
They come from anywhere.
Listen, no. The guy, I know some of these Borgs who come every year. They're amazing. They work in the garage all year, and they are absolutely remarkable, and they have discretionary income, and they've got the time, and they make it, and it's beautiful. And then somebody will have a very sort of fun, metaphorical, almost like a, wow, why didn't I think of that, but very simple costume, and it's not a level playing field. Well, I don't want to say level playing field, but it's great that you had the different categories for those different costumes.
I'm going to go to the Ratatouille card here, since that's one of my favorite Pixar movies. But the idea that anyone can cook, that you can get great things from any corner, and I truly believe that about Star Trek fandom. We've got fans all over the globe in every corner that you can imagine, and they have some terrific ideas and inspirations. I want to see more fans involved. And I think the guidelines that we have will make it easier for more people to enter. It will make it easier for more people to complete films with the shorter length that's involved. And we won't see things spiraling off into the direction of how many cool T-shirts or ships or things like that can I get for donating, instead of donating just because this person has a great idea for a film and I want to see that story on screen.
So before we get into the nitty-gritty of some of the questions, some more sort of larger questions. Did you how did you decide on the specifics of the guidelines? I mean, you know, what went into making their, they happen to be 10. So they, if you want to call them the Ten Commandments, go right ahead. But when you came down from the mountaintop, you know, how did coming up with these 10 work out?
Well, a lot of consideration went into this. I know people are quick to believe that this is something that was dashed off hastily, but that's not the case at all. We've made an effort here to encourage fans and to provide an outlet for fans, and to do so in a way that also doesn't infringe on the copyrights of Star Trek or directly compete with the efforts of either Paramount or CBS, who do own the rights to Star Trek. And there's also a great many people who have worked on Star Trek over the decades, and they have a bit of a they've got a bit of a stake in all of this as well. I'm incredibly fortunate to be a part of this amazing thing called Star Trek, but the way I approach it, that's it. I'm a caretaker. As long as I'm in the position, it's my job to work with Star Trek and try every single day to leave it a little bit better than I found it when I took over. And if I can add to the legacy of Star Trek in even a small way, that's something I'm incredibly proud of. And that's the way so many people that have worked on Star Trek over the years, and so many of these amazing people that I've been able to work with on different things, whether it's the Mike and Denise Okuda on the Star Trek Encyclopedia or Rick Sternbach on tech manuals and things like that. It's just an amazing opportunity for all of us to try and create something that goes beyond what we see on the show. But we all feel an incredible responsibility to represent Star Trek properly and, like I said, to leave it better than we found it. Fan fiction, fan productions, they involve incredibly complex issues. So our discussions in getting to this involved people in a number of areas, at both Paramount and CBS. We both have a stake in Star Trek, how it's presented. And we have obligations both to the fans as well as to the companies to protect the value of Star Trek and preserve the value of Star Trek for future generations and keep that value as high as possible so that it enables us to do things like this amazing new show that's coming from Brian Fuller. I can't even tell you how thrilled I am about what's in the works for that. And a lot of the emphasis for this, frankly, came from what we've seen happening with fan films in recent years, and it what we felt needed to be done in order to protect fan films for the long term. And that seems a little counterintuitive, that putting some form of what people are considering to be restrictions on fan creativity, but it's. It's something that needed to be done in order to cure some abuses that have been out there and to kind of refocus this around the fan experience and around creating more stories rather than this kind of arms race about talent and fundraising.
And budget also, and sort of a bloat, if you will, about a project that goes, you know, just keeps raising money, and never actually gets anywhere. I know you are a CBS employee, so you can't comment on this. But from my point of view, there are other franchises that there are very few franchises. There's only two now franchises that have any sort of guidelines. There's Star Wars and Star Trek.
That's correct.
And if you want to make a Batman film, you can do it and put it online, and what'll happen is either nobody will say anything, or if it goes too far, you'll get a cease and desist from whoever owns the IP to that or whatever it is, and it's kind of the Wild West. With Star Wars, there is something called the fan film contest, and they do have limitations and restrictions that, as far as I can see, are significantly less lenient than the guidelines that you've positioned. Is that a fair thing to say?
That is a fair thing to say. The Star Wars fan film awards, the fan film contest, limits the films to 5 minutes or under. That certainly makes the dealing with the judging in a contest and everything else far easier to do. And there are a lot of restrictions in what you can do with the film, and in who can work on the film, et cetera, et cetera. What we're doing is trying to create a set of guidelines that are out there and enable people to know, if we stick within these, we're not going to hear from CBS. We're not going to hear from Paramount. We have nothing to worry about.
Would you correct me if I'm wrong? Like I said earlier, the last thing that you guys want to do is get involved in any litigation with any fan film creators.
We absolutely consider a lawsuit to be our last resort. That's the last thing that we ever want to get into.
Right.
It's definitely not where we want to hit at any time.
So a couple of questions that I got via Facebook when I mentioned that we would be talking to you, and just sort of particular things. And I'm going to try to answer them, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong. Number one, well, the most common question was, there are a lot of fan films that are out there that do not meet the current guidelines. They already exist. They're on the internet. People like them. Are you going to chase them down and tell them to remove from the internet?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
So that answers
at least 50% of all the questions I've got. And we can name them by name if you want. We know what these are.
Fan films that are already out there, and there's a long and rich history of Star Trek fan productions. We're not, and there's definitely ones that exceed the length requirement and exceed the requirement of not having professional Trek actors and things like that. We're not going and chasing things down retroactively. We're not going to be contacting YouTube and service providers and trying to scrub the internet of fan Star Trek. That is not the intent of this. Anything that is already out there will remain out there. We have no intention of taking anything down.
While we're going through questions here, John, two quickies. There was a guy who contacted me. Again, everybody's got like these weird little situations, but there was one person who did a fan film 20 years ago, and he just remastered it and he raised money, but it's longer than the 30 minutes, and he was just about to put it online, and now he's worried that he won't be in compliance. Is this somebody who needs to worry, or this one's,
These guidelines are meant for films on a going-forward basis. If this is a film that's already been in existence before, the fact that he's remastering it to repost it in better quality, that's not an issue for us.
Okay, that's what I figure. Now, also, let's say somebody raises their money, they follow the rules, they shoot it, they cut it, they got it ready to go, they're about to put it up on a streaming platform. Do they contact you and for review or no? I mean, they just do it, and I mean, you're not reviewing each of these, are you?
No, we're not reviewing your script. We're not reviewing your ideas. We're not reviewing your casting. We're not reviewing your creativity. If you are done with your film and you feel it fits within the guidelines and you're happy with where it's at and you have no more editing tweaks to make on it, please, by all means, get it out there to your public. When your film is done, your film's done. We don't need to have you send it in and have us look at it and make sure every element that you've done. It's like, oh, what did he do for that phaser? Yeah, we're not looking to micromanage what you do.
So, if somebody makes a new film and is in compliance with the guidelines, puts it online, they will never hear from you if they're doing it right. The only thing they'll hear from you is if you love it and say, oh my God, that was a great episode.
But if they do it great, they may hear from us and like, hey, that was awesome. But
right.
Yeah, no.
But if they don't hear that, they shouldn't feel offended.
The idea is to make this simple and seamless.
Some of those bigger productions, a handful of them, you have been in touch with them. And without getting into the specifics about what their sort of forward plans are. It's not like you're springing a surprise on them, nor are they springing a surprise on you. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, we have had a long history with fan productions and fan initiatives of various kinds. We're very much eager to have fans involved in Star Trek. I'm not sure what the best way to elucidate on all this is, but we want fans involved, very much so. We just want them involved in the right way that's going to be best for fandom as a whole, is going to be best for Star Trek as a whole, and is going to help us evolve and bring Star Trek to a bigger and brighter future. We do treat every use of our IP on a case-by-case basis. We do not like to paint with a big, broad brush and tar and feather everything in a specific way just because that is the most expedient. We have been in contact with different fan film groups over the years, as well as recently. I've had, in the past week, a couple of groups have reached out to me looking for clarification. Hopefully what I'm able to do today will provide some of that in right. answering some of the questions people
have. I mean,
have.
And there's even one, there's one particular production that people really like that they are, changing things in order to keep going, but to be in compliance with the guidelines, changing names, changing, titles, things of that nature. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Over the weekend, I saw reports that Star Trek Renegades had opted instead to shift course from what they were doing and turn their planned film into their own unique and original direction, and try and sort of spin off from what they had originally created into their own unique and original IP. That's great. I encourage fans also to, express their love for Star Trek by, creating their own worlds. I think that's a terrific, terrific thing to do. And ultimately much easier for them.
Well, when George Lucas couldn't get Flash Gordon, he made Star Wars, right?
Absolutely. And there's a whole lot less canon that you have to worry about that way now, isn't there? If you're creating your own.
Which is not to say that if you want to do your own 15-minute thing, God bless. But if you want to do something else, but you were talking about encouraging fans, and I know that you can't get too specific about it. But can you talk a little bit about what you've done with fans with regard to artwork and fiction?
Well, it's easy to think that Star Trek is lately in terms of fan initiatives is all about fan films, and that's not it at all. We've long encouraged fan creativity and fan participation in Star Trek. Fan fiction gives room for a lot of amateur voices to express themselves through Star Trek. We've done that in a variety of formats over the years. We've had the Strange New Worlds fan fiction contest with Simon & Schuster, which we initiated bringing back for the 50th anniversary and just announced the winners of that recently. 2 years ago, we had a fan art contest for our Ships of the Line calendar. Now, we didn't run the contest where we're going to turn over one image of 1 month of the calendar to one winner. We turned the entire calendar over to fan artwork, and every image that's in it was created by a fan. We've had multiple contests to design Star Trek ships that have created memorable designs, both for Simon & Schuster in terms of the design of the USS Titan and for the Enterprise F that's been featured in Star Trek Online. And we got some amazing, amazing work for that. And what's great about it is we've discovered some new talent. We could have easily gone to very talented ship designers that we know, Rick Sternbach and John Eaves and Doug Drexler, and they could have whipped something out easily. But we thought with those things, wouldn't this be great to have a fan have the opportunity to do this, and we got some different looks at things, and I'm incredibly proud of that record. And let's not forget Star Trek was the last show in Hollywood that still had an open script submission policy. Even while I was still at the studio, anybody could send in a spec script and it would get read and it would get evaluated, and people had an opportunity to have their voice heard and get consideration. And that's an amazing, amazing thing about Star Trek.
Another question that I got, which I think the answer is pretty straightforward, is somebody was saying, well, we're recording a long-form radio play. Does that count as fan film? And I think the answer is no, right?
No. That audio dramas definitely do not qualify under this. These are fan film guidelines.
Fan films only. But that does include also animation, anything visual.
Yes.
Is a fan film.
Yeah.
Okay, because there were some...
Yeah,
some confusion about that.
If it's a visual representation of Star Trek that way, that would qualify as a film. Animation, computer animation, et cetera.
There was somebody else that asked 15 minutes for the film. Does that include the credits? And tell me if the answer is right. The answer is yes, but no. Like if it comes to 15 minutes and 6 seconds... fine, but go for 15 minutes, right? Shave it down.
These are guidelines. They are intended to be something that gives structure and lets people know the limits they can operate within, where they know they're not going to get a knock on the door. Well, we don't go house to house anyway. They're not going to hear from us. They're not going to get a phone call. They're not going to get an email. They're not going to get anything that is going to ruin their day one way or another and make them, you know, feel bad or like they've done anything wrong. They're guidelines. We're not going to be able to provide the level of feedback that's like, you know, I got this really great scene, but if I include this scene or this one really cool shot, I don't want to cut anything else from it. It's going to make the film 15 minutes and 30 seconds. What do I do? That's up to you and your, you know, creative decisions. We're not looking to get into that. We're not approving any material. We don't want to get involved in your script choices, your costuming
choices.
Right, because
you're not licensing.
These are
unlicensed things. It's up to the individual, but these are the guidelines.
But what we're asking for here, honestly, is we're asking for a level of cooperation from fandom themselves. I have a responsibility every day with what comes across my desk to look at it and make sure that it properly respects Star Trek, that it properly pays tribute to Star Trek, that it properly represents what people love about Star Trek. And we feel very much that that is what fans need to do with these films. That is a responsibility that we all share in. And as long as you're representing Star Trek appropriately and you're doing it within these guidelines, there's no issues whatsoever.
A couple of other key questions that came up a lot. I forgot myself. Yes. Okay. The money, the dough, right? A lot of this comes down to dough. 50 grand is the amount of the limit for raising money over, these crowdsourcing platforms like Indiegogo and Kickstarter. If you have a rich uncle and that rich uncle wants to give you $1 million, that's not what you're talking about here. You're talking about raising money over,
We're specifically talking about crowdfunding campaigns. If you've got, you know, rich Uncle Alfred who wants to, throw $200,000 at you, it's like we're not looking at that. Where we've seen problems creep in is with large crowdfunding campaigns with a great deal of rewards involved in it, to where people are like donating the money because they're going to get a cool piece of merchandise rather than because they want to support a really cool fan project.
Right. So that's where the number comes in, because that's the number that you feel once it reaches that threshold. After that, it starts getting a little weird, and the producers start.
It does, and also I feel, you know, strongly that $50,000, where you're talking about 15 minutes, should be able to go fairly far. All of this is definitely a conversation. we hope that we hope very much that this helps kind of settle things with Star Trek fan films, that it provides some clarity for everybody, and that we can see what is working and what's not working, and we can follow up accordingly with that. We're not issuing these as fan film laws. These are fan film guidelines, and we want people very much to operate within these and respect both us and Star Trek as a whole. $50,000 over 15 minutes when people have been used to seeing $80,000 spent for a 45-minute episode, or $100,000 or $150,000 spent to create something much longer. $50,000 for 15 minutes should go pretty far. We've seen some astonishing creativity for even less money than this from fan groups. And I think this gives a target. I know for Star Wars, for anything, I believe in the their contest rules don't provide any guidance on money, and for anything unofficial, I believe they've said publicly that crowdfunding is forbidden. We are specifically allowing $50,000 of crowdfunding.
Right, right, and then there's also it's 15 minutes, and there is the option to do a part two if you must do that. You have the option, but that's another. That's part of the $50,000, correct?
$50,000 is available per 15 minutes.
Oh, okay. The other thing that brought up a lot of questions was regarding costumes, props, and weapons, things of that nature, that there's one of the guidelines states, I don't have the exact word in front of me, if it is available through our licensees, the licensors, then, use that one.
This is definitely an area of big misconception. Right, because if
I want to make my own tricorder out of macaroni, what the heck, man? I can do that, right?
And Jordan, you are now committed to make a tricorder out of macaroni just so I can see it.
So can you shed a little light on that one? Because that one did lead to some questions. And I get it. Now, Anovos, one of your licensors, makes gorgeous costumes, but if somebody wants to make their own, what do they do?
They make their own. Anovos is a terrific example, because this is a company that was started by a couple of fans who did not yet even have a operating business, who did not yet have a license from anybody else, who came to us with a presentation and a plan and some samples of the quality of work that they felt they could do. And they have created a business out of that. We looked at it. We were like, yes, let's try this. They came out of fan ranks. And they have spent, over the years, being a Star Trek licensee, tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars at this point, on development for their products. They make exceptionally good quality stuff that looks screen accurate, that wears well, that is nicely tailored. And you've seen the stuff at conventions. It looks amazing. Mm-hmm. So out of support for Star Trek, we would ask people that if you are doing a fan film, that you not purchase stuff from unlicensed bootleg operators who do not help support official Star Trek and create a climate where we can get more Star Trek. So we're asking that if we have stuff commercially available, that you consider using that on your projects. We do have great quality stuff available from vendors like Anovos, from QMX, etc. And we would like you to respect that and support their investment into Star Trek and dedication to Star Trek. Many times their materials are going to be a perfect fit and provide a great and very accurate shortcut for you. But we're not looking to inhibit fan creativity. We're not looking to limit what you can do on your episode. Like, well, they don't have an officially licensed original series Silver LeMay environmental suit, so what do? I guess I have to cut that from my story. Nope. What you have to do then is get somebody who's really talented that can make one. And that's fine. We're not looking to inhibit that. We're not looking to get rid of the DIY ethic of Star Trek
right.
fans.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and then once you've made it, you're hoping that the person is not going to turn around and sell it as a perk in their
yes, we're hoping people aren't going to decide, hey, I did a really good job making that, I'm going to go into business doing that. But I completely get that. When I was a kid, 10 years old, 11 years old, and I'd see a Star Trek episode with a really cool thing in it, and I'd be digging through everything in the house, seeing it's like, oh, here's an old wrapping paper tube. If I take that and this coat hanger and this cut out this piece of cardboard and spray paint it silver, what can I make this thing that I right. saw in the episode? And I get that. That's part of the fun of Star Trek. You were talking about the costuming that you see at these conventions where you have people showing up as the crystalline entity, and that's amazing and that's yeah. wonderful. And by all means, please keep that part of Star Trek going. We're not trying to inhibit that. If there is the opportunity to use official merchandise, we would ask that fans help support the franchise that they love so much.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back to Engage.
Engage.
Official Star Trek podcast with your host, Jordan Hoffman.
You are, after all, irrational.
So now that these guidelines are out there, a question that some people want to know is, does this mean that the litigation that's currently undergoing with the project known as Axanar, is that done? Is the suit over? Or are these two things that are not connected?
These are two things that are separate. As of right now, the suit is active, and I can't comment on pending litigation. That's not appropriate. I can confirm that we're continuing to discuss settlement with the people behind Axanar. The fan film guidelines are a separate issue. It is something that different fan groups have approached us about and asked us for over the years, and we have provided that now. This is an effort to give fans the clearest picture of a framework for fan fiction and films separate from the litigation. It's something I've been working on in one aspect or another for some time. I first started thinking about it and positing what could happen, how could it work, where we can try and bring fan films into the fold in a more official basis, and we've done that. We're the first media company to do that. There is the fan film contest. There have been rules in the past that have only covered parody and satire. That's not the type of storytelling that Star Trek fans want to do. It's fun to poke some fun at certain tropes from Star Trek, but Star Trek fans want to celebrate it. They want to extend that universe. They want to tell their own stories in it. And we don't want to limit it that way. We want to provide a basic framework that says, here's what you can do to keep yourself as a non-commercial entity and respect Star Trek and the professional Star Trek that we are working on. And be able to have hopefully a great deal of fun. I think that, you know, I've heard from a lot of people and seen a lot of chatter online in recent days about the length guideline and people feeling that is untenable and that they can't tell a Star Trek story in 15 minutes or 30 minutes. I think that's a bit insulting to Star Trek and to the creativity of the fans that I've met and to some of the fan filmmakers I've met. The idea that Star Trek is capable of only telling one type or length of a story, That's kind of ludicrous. There are dozens of winners of the Strange New Worlds fiction contest over the years that would disagree, since that's a short story contest. We have fiction writers that write epic multi-part books, and we have fiction writers that write shorter, simpler ebook novellas. In the comics, we have an incredibly tight canvas to work with. We've got 20 pages, and we're just fitting in word balloons around 20 pages of artwork. There's not that much that is on the pages, and it takes a great deal of editing and focus on what story you're telling in order to do that. But it's very possible, and Mike Johnson and Scott and David Tipton and others that we've had working on the comics have done a masterful job of that.
There's a guideline in there that says it's the only one that talks about like what the creative angle, and says that you don't want anyone depicting illegal or illicit behavior, drug use, so you know, deviant sexual activity, et cetera, et cetera. But the show, the show has pushed envelopes over the years. The characters go to interesting places. I mean, you know. In the pale moonlight, Captain Sisko.
That's pretty dark.
One could argue he would say the ends justifies the means in certain cases, and maybe is complicit in the murder of a Romulan. I mean,
that's one of my favorite Star Trek episodes. You're absolutely right.
And there's there's some episodes that talk about genocide. You know, there's heavy duty stuff on Star Trek. So, what can you shed a little light on that guideline, because that seems to perhaps be a little contradictory.
Yeah, it on its surface it is, but again, this is a guideline. This is not the hand of Q coming down and dictating what you can do in your story, and you have to submit it, and we're going to send it through standards and practices and make sure that everything complies perfectly. We're not looking to do that. We're not looking to get in your business creatively. Star Trek has absolutely depicted things like that. This is intended as a guideline. It's also intended as a means to protect us and to protect Star Trek from things that are not appropriate for it or not good for it. Part of what made Star Trek successful is doing episodes that deal with drug addiction, the psychological effects of torture. You know, thank goodness there's only one light in here and not four. But there's a responsibility we have to Star Trek. And this seems like a crazy thought on first blush. What are you protecting it from? But it's quite real. And it's one thing for official Star Trek, which is subject to internal review, to handle those things appropriately. But it's another when unofficial third parties may want to do something that we find unacceptable or damaging to a beloved character. I mentioned the thing about Wesley Crusher before. We've had stories come across our desk that have involved a beloved captain abusing a child, getting ready to whip a child. And it's like, no, that's not going to happen. Or, you know, behaving in an out of character or, you know, misogynistic way or something like that. Actions that are fundamentally against who those characters are and why they've become beloved characters. So we have to protect against that. We're not looking to review scripts, as I said, or your story decisions. But with that freedom, you have to understand, comes a responsibility to treat Star Trek with the respect it's due and not do anything that negatively impacts on Star Trek or its various elements. If your material doesn't negatively reflect on Star Trek but comments appropriately on societal and social issues in the finest traditions of Star Trek, episodes like In the Pale Moonlight are a good example. There won't be any issues. And in fact, your episodes will be much better. They'll definitely be better Star Trek if you do use them to comment on those things. And that's going to necessitate depicting certain unsavory things.
So what you're saying is there is not going to be a review board out there saying, oh, the way your version of Captain Kirk did that, he wouldn't really do it that way. That's not in his character. No, you're not talking that level of review, but, you know,
only if you're a licensed writer. Right. And you'll be subject to that level of review.
And thank God you're there. We need you on that wall. But having Captain Kirk doing something, you know, profane, and what is profanity is a long conversation, but I think we know when we see it, doing something that's totally out of character for some sort of shock value reason, that isn't parody. That, correct me if I'm wrong, is where you say, no, these are Star Trek characters and we have to protect them.
If you do something that's going to be damaging to the fundamental character of Star Trek, of beloved characters, Captain Kirk, Captain Picard, Beverly Crusher, whoever it may be from across the pantheon of Star Trek, if you're doing anything that's going to damage that's going to put them or things like that in an overtly negative light that goes against what we've seen and what we know about these elements of Star Trek, then there will be a problem. Otherwise, like I said, if you're using it to comment on societal and social issues, we're not going to look. We've all have a duty to Star Trek, whether you're a fan or an employee of CBS or Paramount in that respect, to really honor what that creation is, what Rick Berman and Gene Roddenberry and Ron Moore and Brian Fuller and all of these amazing, amazing creators have done to create this just incredible, incredible thing called Star Trek. We've got a duty to respect it and protect it.
What about the music? I know that there were some questions about people wanting to use music in their fan films.
Well, when I talk about fan films being a complex landscape, this is one of the things that immediately comes to mind because it comes to mind on a daily basis for us and projects that we're working on. We may own Star Trek, but we don't own the rights to Star Trek music, and we can't grant those rights to fan films. As much as we might want to, use that opening theme, whether it's from TNG or from the original series, all over the place and get that music out there. I was listening to Star Trek music on my way here because that's the kind of guy I am. When we mention in the guidelines things like needing to clear any third-party rights for content in writing in the guidelines, this is why. We don't control those rights. We can't give you the rights to the music. It's likely fans may want to utilize stuff that we can't grant rights to because we don't own those rights. Star Trek music is very much included in that. If you want to use Jerry Goldsmith's Klingon themes because you got this amazing Klingon attack that you're planning in your film, or the opening four tones from the TOS theme song, or anything else from all the great Star Trek music, you should contact the music publisher for that and secure those rights because we don't have them and we can't grant them.
Okay. I think that's all the questions I had. There were a couple of very specific kind of weird sort of oddball questions, but I think, as a general rule, the reason why you've created these guidelines is that you don't want to be on the receiving end of, what about this and what about that and what about this? You can't do that. You've got a job to do. The creation of these guidelines were meant so that they would answer the questions for people. So if there is a project that is not shooting yet, that is in the process of raising money, they need to correct course a little bit and follow what you're talking about here. Is that a proper way of stating it?
That's a fair statement, and we, as I said earlier, we try very much to treat each use of the Star Trek brand and each use of Star Trek on its own merits. We don't look at everything identically. If you we've had situations where we've been approached by a bereaved family or an undertaker who's like, in this guy's last will and testament, there's this request to put the Starfleet Delta on their headstone. We don't even know what that means, but we know it's from Star Trek. What do we do? Can we do this? And it's like, by all means, if someone is as big a fan of Star Trek that they want to be the last thing the way they leave this world, then that's amazing. And absolutely, here you go. Here's the file for the logo. do it the best you possibly can. And we're not looking to treat everything the same. And a good part of a big part of that is what your intentions are with the brand. And how you're looking to utilize it, what you're looking to do with it. So we don't approach everything the same. Again, these are guidelines. If participants stay within them, there should be no issues. We can't provide flexibility to the degree that if you're looking for that variance on a few extra seconds of running time or want to know what to do if, you know, your mom sent you $500 to add to the budget. We don't want to micromanage fan projects that way. We do want to flesh out what non-commercial fan film means in a way that's clear and fair and equitable for everybody.
And that also has to do with what you spoke about earlier about who has the bigger Hollywood connections, who can get an actor that's known, that has an affiliation with Star Trek that's going to automatically make it seem quasi sort of official because, oh, that guy, he's playing that character. And that is something that only a very, very, very minuscule percentage of fan filmmakers can do. And it's sort of... as you said earlier, is anathema to what fan films are all about.
Yeah, and what I'm honestly hoping will happen with these guidelines, with a 15-minute or 30-minute limit on this, and a $50,000 crowdfunding limit, I think it's going to be easier for people to hit their goals quickly and easily and get their projects underway. I think with the 15-minute limit, I think with some of the things that are here, is it's going to make it easier than ever for more people to pick up cameras. Everybody's walking around with a high-definition video camera in their pocket now, which is it's amazing that's where we're at. You buy computers and there's capable video editing software preloaded on it. It's an amazing time for that. What we want to do is we want to drive more films forward, more fan voices, not fewer. We want more. We want to see more people express their creativity for Star Trek. And hopefully out of that, we'll be able to find new ways to take advantage of this and to see Star Trek continue to grow and evolve. I've definitely had people express their concerns about what this means. It's a big adjustment. There's no question.
Yeah,
people have gotten used to full like 1960s length episodes of, you know, 50 minutes plus, 90-minute feature films. But that's what we do. We're producing full length episodes with and Paramount's producing amazing amounts of, I mean, the budgets that are involved on a Star Trek motion picture now are beyond anything I could, you know, possibly have believed 10, 15 years ago,
right,
that kind of budget would be available to Star Trek.
And you're still inviting people to come aboard in a very specific and ultimately fruitful way.
Absolutely. And you know, we're definitely out there. I mean, I believe me, if people are saying it about fan films online, we're aware of what's going on. There's the idea that there's people locked in a room somewhere and don't know. I'm out at Star Trek Las Vegas. I'll be at Mission New York. I'll be at Destination Star Trek Europe this year. I'll be at Comic-Con. I'm out there. This is what I do. I love it. I live it. I'm amazed that I get paid to be a part of it. But don't you know, tell anybody.
John, I'm going to give you an analysis. I'm going to give you my analysis here. Here it comes. Now that I've listened to you speak for a very long time, now reminder, I am not a CBS employee. So I'm a human being responding to this right now. Here it comes. You ready?
I'm always ready, Jordan.
Hoping
it's about Tuvix or Keenser.
For a number of people who really were loving certain productions and were either involved as donors or just fans of it, it's going to take some adjustment, and it's going to suck for a little while. They're going to be angry. People are angry when something that they like is when people are angry when anybody tells you what to do. I get on the bus and somebody tells me to sit where I don't want to sit. I get angry. So people are going to get angry for a little while. But in time, fast forward to a year from now, we're going to have an ecosystem for fan films that I think is going to be much, much better than what we have right now. And there will always be some hardcore fans that loved certain productions that aren't going to be continuing. But I really do think that for most people, this is going to be a very, very good thing. And, you know, the current litigation with Axanar, there are people that just, you know, are like to cause a fuss about that. And, you know, that's up for the courts to decide. But that aside, that has nothing to do with this. You know, you're telling me that you've been in conversation with some of the creators of other bigger productions, not Axanar, and that there's going to be ways for these creative people to do what they want to do in the context of these guidelines that is going to make Star Trek fan films Mach 2.0, whatever you want to call it, a pretty spectacular place. That's my statement on this.
I hope so. I mean, it's very hard for me to predict where things are going to go with groups that already have plans underway that may have cast people that under these guidelines would be, you know, not...
Man. They're going to be pissed off.
Not considered to be eligible.
They're going to hate you.
Change is hard. I mean, if I were to at my dinner table move my son to another spot to sit down to eat his dinner, he'd probably lose his mind. Change is hard for people. There's no question, and this is a big change over what people have gotten used to. But what there is to gain out of this is something amazing, which is that there is a certainty where we are the first studio in town, the first ones that are providing, like, look, here are some guidelines for you to go out and create in our universe without any threat, any worry whatsoever, that this is now a completely permitted thing as long as you're within these guidelines. And that's amazing because that's unprecedented. No one else does that. The guidelines just don't exist. So it's a little scary for us. This is a big change for us. This is trailblazing in many respects.
If this were the episode Parallels and we could look into a parallel universe, there would be, if you didn't have this job, if they didn't have a guy like you working at CBS, when these problems would come up, there might just be somebody say, well, screw them, sue them all. Boom, the hammer of justice comes down. If you're there saying, no, that's the last thing you want to do.
If you had asked me 5 years ago if we would get to the point where we were had guidelines that officially permitted the use of Star Trek for fan filmed fan content like this, I would not have believed it was something that would happen. And yet here we are, and it's happening. And I think there's two ways to go with this. You can look at this as shackles, and like, well, this isn't exactly what I've known, or like, okay, let's figure out how we can use this creatively, how we can use this to create a whole new frontier, and take Star Trek in new directions and new things. To tell Star Trek is such a rich, vast universe that you know, I often talk to fans and there are things like, oh, you know, it would be really cool to like, you know, learn something about how Starfleet Medical operates, or this little story about this one character, you know, what's Murdoch the Benzite doing these days, or whatever it may be. And it's like, is that something that you want to do an entire season or a series about? Well, probably not. But is it something that you could do a neat 15, 30-minute film on and could be really creative and really different from anything else that's been out there for Star Trek? Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to people showing us what those are. I've seen a couple of short Star Trek fan films online, and it's like, wow, that's really cool. You did something neat with very, very little, and you created something in like 10 minutes that I was thoroughly engaged by, and that's amazing. I mean, you think about the short films that Pixar produces that go before their movies.
Oh yeah.
And if you think that you can't do great character development and something really compelling. The number of Academy Awards that have gone to short films like that would belie that. I mean, that stuff is amazing, and I often look forward to those as much as I do the feature. Like, what's the short film in this one going to be? And it's really exciting.
A beautiful part. I don't know if you saw Piper, which was before Finding Dory. It was beautiful. It was very, very short.
I haven't, but I'm hoping tomorrow.
I mean, what would be the Piper of the Star Trek universe? A beautiful, little picture on a frame there. I think we've said it all. So I'm very glad that we were able to bring you on today, John, because, we wanted to shed some light on this topic because, when anything new pops up, everybody has a lot of questions, and it was important to me that people got to hear, the thinking that went behind it. There will be some people that are still unhappy. There's nothing we can do about that. But I think many to most people will understand what you're trying to do and how compelled you are to protect the brand in this sort of new digital frontier. And, these are changing times and you're reacting to that.
They are changing times. It is difficult. There are going to be there's definitely going to be shades of gray in all of this. There always are. I think that's one of the things that our attorneys tend to either appreciate me for or curse me for in finding a lot of those shades of gray and different interpretations of things. But we're looking at this as, like I said, a great new frontier and a great opportunity. It's something that we've never had before. It's brand new. It's going to be an adjustment for everybody involved. It's going to be an adjustment for me because this whole question is something that didn't used to take up much of my time or consideration. It's clearly going to take more of my time and consideration. But the fact that there is an official permitted outlet for fans where you don't have to concern yourself about am I going to anger anybody if I do this? It's like you've got a framework that there's not going to be a problem. We'll continue the dialogue with fans. We'll continue seeing how everything works, and we're very excited about where we're at with it. And I think that there's a bright future ahead.
Let me throw something at you. I mean, it's a new day with this. I mean, in the past, when people have had fan films and there have been conventions, it's kind of been like well, we can't show it here, so it's sort of underground. Now this is all above board. I know that you guys are never going to be officially condoning this because you can't, because they're unlicensed, but it's not secretive. It's like, oh, this is a cool thing. Like, I can talk about it. I'm the official quote-unquote podcast. If something really cool is out there, it's something that exists.
If you're operating within the framework of this, it's going to open up new opportunities. There's no question. At official events and conventions in the past, we haven't been able to grant permission to show fan films. We haven't been able to grant permission for fan film groups to exhibit and fundraise at them. If you're in compliance with these, that is something that's going to change. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity that comes along with this, and that's something that I'm very excited about because it's going to help ramp up fan involvement and fan participation in something.
It's
I can't even begin to explain
that's a really great and big point that we buried at the end of the show, John.
I'm good at burying the lead, man.
Well, hopefully, listen, anybody who's interested in this at all is going to listen to the whole thing. Either people are going to tune out in the first 2 minutes and listen to the whole thing. So for the people that are listening to the whole thing, there's the cherry at the end of the podcast there. But I mean, obviously nothing official, but I think that's a really, it's just a new day. It's a new day for fan films and for CBS. It's like getting all out. It's like we had an intervention. It's like we went to marriage counseling and we got it all out in the open. And now we're talking about it and we don't have to hide and we can engage with one another. We, meaning the fans that are making the films and the brand and the license and CBS. And, if everybody's in compliance with these very generous guidelines, then it's, it's all cool, man. It's like Dharma and Gelada Tanagra, man. It's really great. So I feel like I need a drink now. This is heavy duty stuff. So
I'm incredibly excited about what's to come. I love Star Trek and everything associated with it, as much if not more than so many fans do. It's been an incredible part of my life. It's helped shape who I am, as it has for many, many fans, and I absolutely want to do what is best for Star Trek as a whole, both now and for the long-term health of Star Trek. And I want to do the best that we possibly can by Star Trek fans who Star Trek, no question, owes a lot to. I would put Star Trek fans against any other fan base anytime. I think our fans are terrific. They're amazing. And I'm just really hoping that these guidelines will help spur additional creativity. It's going to be different creativity, but again, it's the first time that anything has existed officially like this. It's a brave new frontier, and I'm looking forward to seeing what that brings. It's going to change as hard initially, but I'm very excited about what's to come. I love Star Trek in all of its forms. I love technobabble. I love everything about it, and I can't wait to see what's next.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to cut it there. People that are going to have follow-up questions, and you're going to be around at the convention, if people need to contact you, they can figure it out. They know how to contact you.
People have already figured it out.
All right. Very good. Well, listen, thanks for coming on, and the next time we have you on, we'll be talking about other topics, not only just new products that you guys are working on, the new encyclopedia is coming out soon, and but also just to talk about, Tuvix and Keenzer and Mores and all the great characters that we love. And John, thanks again. I think what you've done today is probably helped a lot of fans that needed more information get the info that they need.
I hope we've helped to provide a little context about what we're trying to do with this and what the guidelines actually mean. That they're not intended to squash fan creativity. We're just hoping to guide fan creativity in a slightly different way, but a way that I think can be very exciting if people seize the opportunity that it presents.
Cool. All right, man. Well, listen, I'll be seeing you in Las Vegas in the not too distant future.
A lot sooner than I would like.
All right, live long. Lots to do between
now and then.
Yes, yes. All right. Live long and et cetera, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jordan. It's been a pleasure.
You got it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.